Welcome to MoneyWeb at Midday, the actuality news show, offering unique insights and in-depth analysis featuring South Africa's top business leaders, newsmakers, and analysts for today's professionals. Your host, Jeremy Mads.
Hello and welcome to MoneyWeb at Midday. I'm Jeremy Mags with 30 minutes packed with the latest South African and global news. We are live right now and then you can catch it later as a podcast. Please stay tuned for interviews with key business and political figures, prominent newsmakers and leading experts delivering all the essential updates that you need fast and focused. It's Wednesday, the 25th of September. On our program today, the performance of the Government of National Unity's first 100 days. A fraud expert on why it's unlikely that Elon Musk is trying to borrow money from you. What will happen to the residents of Cape Town's shantytown as they're forced to move via a court order. And 91 billion rand in unclaimed assets. How to find out if you are due for a windfall. Well, if the stock market is anything to go by, investors are certainly happy with the first 100 days of the GNU, the all-share index, hitting a new high today. But going forward, I wonder if the centre will remain intact or do we still need to hold our breath for some time to come? Ferial Hafiji is an associate editor at the Daily Maverick and an astute watcher of politics in South Africa, and she's first up on our program today. Ferial, thank you so much for talking to us today. Are you surprised that 100 days in, things are still sailing, that things haven't imploded as far as the government is concerned?
Good afternoon, Jeremy. So I must say I am surprised by the amount of goodwill there is for this power sharing arrangement which has been struck in South Africa, both internationally and locally. I thought that there would be more potholes on this road, but they seem to have found each other. And I think there's also a sense of, if we don't get this thing together, a lot of very entrenched political lives could come asunder in the next two elections.
How do you think, Ferial, the GNU is able to handle points of contention? And we know there have been many. Is it mature leadership or a sense of what you're saying is that we can't afford to fail?
I think it's more a case of we can't afford to fail, and then also the fact that this is the milieu in which our President Cyril Ramaphosa is, of course, most at home. He was one of the birthing figures of the first government of national unity 30 years ago. He's an astute negotiator, so he's doing what he does very well, which is kick things into touch. And the two areas where we can see that most clearly is the National Health Initiative, or NHI, and also the Basic Education Laws Amendment Act. Those are the two areas where the GNU has most been tested, and we see his very clear method at play there.
What do you think the dark clouds on the horizon are? Because it's not always going to be plain sailing, is it?
Not at all. I think the dark clouds on the horizon is our cities. I'm not sure if you still live in Joburg, but it's for me a very clear bellwether of what could happen in 2 years' time. So if cities aren't fixed, the ones that don't work, that's where most people live, and it's where the ANC lost the election. It's also where the DA didn't do as well as it thought it would. So I am watching those cities very carefully, and specifically Johannesburg, Tshwane, and Ekurhuleni, as well as Nelson Mandela Bay.
Ferial, forces, of course, are gathering on the left. Do you think that they pose any immediate threat to the GNU, or do you think that particular risk is starting to dissipate?
If you look carefully at what the ANC has been saying, specifically its Youth League, I think there's quite a substantial lobby to bring the EFF into the government of national unity. It chose to stay outside, and then once Floyd Shivambu left the EFF, it's been left not quite knowing what to do. So you'll see them putting out crazy statements about Paul Pretorius and Matthew Chaskelson, and the advocates in the investigating directorate. So I think that's going to be a way of dealing with this force mustering. And then I haven't yet seen anything out of MK which suggests a strategy that can overturn the trajectory of the GNU. But it is early days. It's only 100 days.
Would you agree that it seems as if government communication has also inched up a little bit, has got better?
I think that what had happened is we all know as communications experts that the DA is extremely good at this. So you saw its ministers getting out of those blocks so quickly, Jeremy. You saw Leon Schreiber making early gains as Home Affairs Minister, Siviwe Gwarube, for example. There was that ANC-NEC meeting where they said, come on, GCIS, you have to get your act together. So suddenly, as a journalist, we have more access and more information than I've seen in quite a few administrations since 1994, and that surely is a good thing.
Of course, one of the big challenges for this GNU going forward is still addressing institutional challenges like corruption and accountability. It's starting to move in a direction, but the cynicism monitor is still fairly high on that one, Ferial.
Yeah, the pessimism monitor is very high, and with good reason. I think people do want to see the major domo of the State Capture Commission of Inquiry in orange overalls, or at least that's what I get asked all the time. But I think you have to take small gains, like last week, the Amigos case of Gaston Savoy finally beginning to reach some kind of end, or prosecutorial end at least. Michael Lomas, the contractor at the heart of Kusile corruption, extradited back, and we should see some movement in that case. I think you've seen a different approach to our justice minister, who is in all kinds of hot water. The ANC saying that she and others should step aside from their roles until they're cleared by courts of law. So I do see some movement, not as much as I think people expected by now. I mean, if you look at the UK, Jeremy, within 5 days, they had some of the worst instigators of the right-wing violent protests in jail, and I think we've taken really long.
And Ferial, just a final one, the business community seems very upbeat at the moment. It's, it's
very
rolled on its back and it's wagging its tail. good news, as I mentioned, about the JSE, for instance, hitting a new record all-time high. But again, business can't be completely seduced by all of this. There is still much to do when it comes to stability and growth within the economy of the country.
MoneyWeb picked up that excellent Bloomberg piece, which looked at very real investments. This is not portfolio flows. This is stuff in the ground. So I do think there's discernible business confidence, and hopefully employment will tick up behind it. I also think that the optimism is the result of all the work being done in energy, logistics, and also hopefully crime and corruption, although I don't think that you and I feel those changes properly yet.
Ferial Hafaji, Associate Editor at the Daily Maverick, thank you so much for talking to me today.
You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
A South African widow has been sending a scammer thousands of rands, believing she was talking to the billionaire Elon Musk, who had apparently lost access to his bank account. Well, obviously, another internet scam. But here's the question. How prevalent are they, and what do we need to watch out for nowadays? I'm in conversation now with Nazia Karim, who is Head of Product Development at the Southern African Fraud Prevention Service. And Nazia, first of all then, how prevalent are these scams in South Africa right now? And perhaps what are the most common types that you're currently seeing?
Well, Jeremy, thank you for having us on the show today. One of the most important things we need to understand is that scams is actually becoming a global issue. And in South Africa, the top three scams, based on the reports made by the victims, keeping in mind that only 7% of the scams are being reported, are advanced fee scams, investment scams, and cyber scams. And one of the types of investment scams is the description you just provided, the impersonation of popular celebrities or trusted members of the community.
The way or the modus operandi, do you think, Nazia, it's becoming more sophisticated, more believable?
Well, yes, definitely. The types of technology we have today is extraordinary. We see it in everyday lives, in movies, in gaming platforms. And it's providing us with a heightened level of enjoyment and an immersive experience when we interact with it in this way. But the fraudsters have also understood this and have begun to use these technology, exploiting them to scam people. Things like deep fakes and voice synthesizers are used to create lifelike images and videos of celebrities or the trusted community leaders to convince you to invest in a particular investment scam that they've got going, or fall victim to other advanced fee scams, or unfortunately, in some cases, romance scams that may also result in targeting lonely hearts online.
What do you think makes people, and again, you mentioned lonely hearts, but you know, maybe widows or even elderly people more vulnerable to these kind of scams?
Well, the elderly or people unfamiliar with the types of technology that we have today are the primary targets in some cases. Actually, they are sweet spots. They're not familiar with the type of technology. They're not understanding the security risks associated to it. They're not actually digitally literate. So this is creating that security risk for them, either trusting the technology too completely or allowing somebody else to push them into performing or using a particular type of technology they are uncertain about.
How do these scammers then go about gaining the trust of their victims?
Well, impersonation of, as we mentioned a little earlier, you used Elon Musk was one of the examples that was impersonated. Elon Musk is a popular South African made it global investment mogul, and many people would be proud to say that is a South African. So they gain the trust by creating association. It's a South African, therefore I can trust that South African. So that association has been created. They will go for perhaps using a political leader or someone in the community that they've met and trusted. So it's creating that association between the actual person that's being impersonated and yourself. What is that personal association between the two? And the image that that person portrays in the public as their personality in real life. Are they trusted? Are they someone that's widely accepted? That is how they actually fall victim to it.
So you mentioned three types of approach. Are there key red flags then that people should be watching out for to identify a potential scam, given as well your comments about them becoming more believable and more sophisticated?
Well, I think there are different types of approaches for different types of scams. So let me just give you one, for example, on an investment scam. I think the first basic rule we all need to understand is if it's too good to be true, it probably is. And in an investment scam, there is no quick win. There isn't an instant rag to riches solution for investments. So that's the first thing every person should always have on the front of their mind. The average return rate for a South African investment is between about 7 and 10%. So if somebody is offering you something more than that, you really need to question the legitimacy of that type of investment. Another thing we need to, it's a harsh point, but relying on financial advice from a celebrity is like trusting a mechanic to do heart surgery on you. You wouldn't do that. So why would you then allow someone who doesn't understand your financial situation, doesn't understand anything about you, give you financial advice and then go about investing in a solution they don't know is fit for you? It's crucial for you to seek guidance from qualified professionals, from reputable and trusted institutions, preferably face-to-face if possible, and somebody, a financial advisor that you've actually had some long-term relationship with. When you fall victim to an investment scam, the scammers, they use these online platforms and mobile applications and they ask you to download them or log into them. It's not that you're only falling victim to the investment scam. You're actually making yourself available to fall re-victimization through cyber scams, because you are downloading these applications that may give the scammer the opportunity to install malware on your devices. Then you're compromising the device, the applications on the device, and any other devices that may have been authorized to connect to that device. And you're actually facilitating the growth of the scammer's network.
Nazia, let me be equally harsh. I mean, you made a very blunt point. I'll give one right back to you. Never underestimate the greed of people, I guess.
Yes. Unfortunately, social and political issues will obviously come into play. Today, getting a job, unemployment rate is quite high. So people are looking for ways to improve their standard of living, their social standing as well. And so they're looking for these easy way outs. Unfortunately, we also need to be responsible. We need to do our due diligence and realize that certain times we need to just follow the process and be patient. It's one of the biggest problems we have today is the lack of patience and the lack to understand something before we just jump right into it.
All right, let's assume then that you feel that you are being taken for a ride. Are there immediate steps, new steps, that people should be taking if they suspect they are being scammed?
Well, the first thing is in the conversation. If you shared any device information, if you shared any personal information, any passwords, stop. First thing you should do is actually report the incident directly to your financial institution so they can actually monitor for any transactions that may have gone off your bank account. You need to change all your passwords to all the devices that may have been linked to any applications. For example, if you were in an investment scam and downloaded one of the online trading platforms that they provided for you, delete those applications, change all your passwords, apply the two-factor authentications, and then immediately go forward to avoid any of these types of investments going forward. You need to also report the incident to the police and report it on SAFPS provided a new website called YIMA for scams prevention. You can report that on the actual website as well. That information helps us gather intelligence to target these syndicates and help take them down. But if we stay quiet about it, I know it's a very sensitive topic and some people feel that it's embarrassing or difficult to speak about it. But if we don't come forward and don't report the incident, we are unable to actually do anything about it.
I will need a very quick answer to this. You talk about the work that your organization is doing. How difficult is it becoming to investigate?
Sure. Every day is a new challenge. The technology is changing the way we play our game. So it's a learning curve and it's a continuous one. So we're always looking to grow. And with that, so are the scammers. So it's a continuous learning curve and everybody needs to stay abreast of all the changes to stay ahead of the scams.
Nazia Karim, thank you very much indeed. Head of Product Development at the Southern African Fraud Prevention Service. I do appreciate your time.
MoneyWeb at midday for all your up-to-date stories.
Well, these are fairly staggering figures. As many as 5 million South Africans are owed 90 billion rand in unclaimed assets. So what's the issue here and are there new efforts to help reclaim? With us now is Jonathan Lamb, Head of Channel and Partnerships at CIB Digital Standard Bank. So, Jonathan, first of all, why have these assets grown to such a significant amount?
I think there's two big reasons why we are where we are with the 90 billion. I think the first one is quite simply, there's a lot of people out there that are formerly employed or have been in the past who simply didn't realize that they were part of a group pension scheme or part of a group share scheme. And if you don't realize that this is part of your package, when you eventually do leave or move on to a new employer, you're not going to go through the process of electing to use that asset, take it with you, cash it out, whatever the case is. So that's the first sort of symptom as to why we've got to where we are. The second big reality is that once it then becomes unclaimed, whatever the asset is, the method of getting them back, the reuniting those assets with their rightful beneficiaries is very fragmented, it's inefficient, it's manual, and it's expensive.
Jonathan, do you not find it odd that people are perhaps ignorant of the process and that they don't know they have this money lying around?
Jeremy, I think, you know, it all depends on a number of things, how financially literate you are. Some of these products are complex. At the end of the day, you know, some dividends vest after an employee has left an organization. A pension scheme has some specific rules around what needs to happen. So it's not perhaps simple for everyone to understand. I think the efforts then for the asset holders, the funds, the insurers, the dividend schemes, to try and find these individuals then becomes a challenge, because explaining to somebody who isn't expecting something, why they're owed something, and then taking them through a process is a difficult, time-consuming, expensive process.
Is there a way of simplifying the complexity, do you think?
Look, I mean, we believe so. The Robin Hood partnership that we've entered into, we certainly believe that through The use of tech, digitizing a large part of the process, will allow us to streamline things. And where there's a fragmented industry, there's often opportunity to innovate. This industry and this problem statement needs aggregation. You need to be able to use multiple stores of trusted data to find these beneficiaries. I mean, the reality is most of the people that are owed, certainly pensions, are likely to be banked. They've worked in a formal sector at some stage. They've probably been paid their salary into a bank account. They're likely to be banked. So the bank store of data is an important piece of the puzzle. The last thing I'd say that will help in solving the problem is the trust element. You know, a lot of people have had a call from somebody saying, you know, do you know that you may be owed some money? Now, because we've been so conditioned to be alert to scammers and fraudsters, a lot of those calls don't end anyway. So this element of trust and brand strength is important. And that's why we think partnering with a fintech like Robinhood as the bank can really help make a significant impact in solving this problem.
So give me a sense of how this Robinhood platform is going to work.
Well, quite simply, the Robinhood strategy is to tap into multiple big sources of data. They need to build a repository of assets. So we're helping them engage into the asset holders, funds, insurers, and so on. Once they've got that, they then weave their own secret sauce into an algorithm that allows them to create more certainty around who the individual is, where they bank, how to get hold of them. And then ultimately, they've digitized a process on streamlining the effort to actually get the money from the asset holder to the individual with all the relevant compliance steps built into it.
I guess it does beg the question as to why it's taken so long for a consolidated solution like Robinhood to be developed and implemented.
Yeah, and you know, Jeremy, I think it takes a set of entrepreneurs who really have a passion around solving for a problem to really put their minds to it, to solve for it. Sometimes, you know, we get stuck in our ways as an industry, and you know, somebody needs to spot the gap where there's fragmentation, expense, complexity. There has to be a simpler way of doing things. Robinhood, we believe, have found that gap, and we're really looking forward to piloting this with them.
And Jonathan, part of it is also predicated, I imagine, on all financial institutions working together more cohesively for us to identify, trace, and claim these assets.
Absolutely. And again, just circling back to that, you know, the data's in the industry. Bring it together in the right way, in a compliant manner, and using it for the benefit ultimately of these beneficiaries to be reunited with their funds. It's key to this. Aggregation is important, and you know, industry working together here to solve this problem, firstly to get rid of the backlog, but also prevent it from getting as big again. We can certainly solve this together.
And should the problem be solved, obviously the impact of unclaimed assets on the broader economy once they are reclaimed surely would have some impact on stimulating economic growth.
Absolutely, Jeremy. And imagine, you know, if you look at the 90 billion, 45 to 48 of it is in the pension fund industry. It's owed to close to 5 million people. Can you imagine putting 45 billion rand, or even if you are, you know, say 4 billion of it, back into the pockets of people who didn't even know it was coming? You know, whether it's 1,000 rand or 100,000 rand, it's impactful to everybody. So I think, you know, the benefit and the upside social impact here is immense. It really is a problem worth putting some resource behind to solve.
So let me ask you a final one then. If we've piqued someone's interest tonight, if they might suspect that they are due something, what should they be doing?
Well, there's two sort of schools of people that I'm hoping we pique interest with here. The one is the funds, those that are holding these assets. And we would encourage them to either directly go to the Robinhood website, robinhood.org.za, or approach us as the bank through your relationship manager, or approach us directly through the OneHub platform. So that's the first almost area to tackle, is getting hold of these funds, insurance companies, whoever's got an unclaimed asset. Then for the retail customers, the individuals, as a start, I think the best place to go is to the Robinhood website. Register your interest there. We're piloting this. We're going to use some of the assets within the group, including the Liberty Unclaimed Assets Fund. But as we get bigger, you know, if you register your details on the Robinhood website, over time we'll continually match to assets that we find.
Jonathan Lamb, thank you very much indeed. Head of Channel and Partnerships at CIB Digital Standard Bank. I do appreciate your time. I have a funny suspicion that this was a very important conversation.
You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
And let's finish the program with this. The Department of Public Works obtaining a court order to evict residents of a shanty town that has sprung up around the Castle of Good Hope in the city. It's an issue that one imagines has the potential to really divide Cape Town now. James de Villiers is with me, who speaks for the Minister of Public Works, Dean McPherson. Mr. de Villiers, welcome. Why did the department go to court to seek this order?
Yeah, I think the Minister of Public Works has been adamant since the beginning that we need to protect public assets to make sure that public assets can be used for public good. And unfortunately, where occupations take place, those assets can't be used for public good. However, the Minister, on a tour of the property on Friday with the City of Cape Town Mayor, Jordan Hill and Lewis, emphasized that it's really about the dignity of the individual staying there. If you go to the Castle of Good Hope now, it's really inhumane conditions where those people are staying in, and therefore the City of Cape Town has really done pioneering work to establish safe spaces where these individuals can stay, where they can wash, where they can clean. It's safe, it's secure, and they can voluntarily go there, and that offer has been there from the start.
But the difficulty is going to ensure that the alternative accommodation meet needs beyond that of just a temporary shelter, surely.
Yes, and that's where the Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure has really commended the work the city has done, because the City of Cape Town has really played a pioneering role in South Africa in establishing these safe spaces, because not only, as mentioned by yourself, is these safe spaces a safe space to stay and eat and drink, but they also offer individuals services to Home Affairs to make sure that they've got access to identity documents, etc., as well as EPWP work opportunities to make sure that these people are able to find a sustainable livelihood in the future.
How many people are we talking about?
I do not have the correct number of the amount of individuals staying there. You have to remember that the court order specifically stipulates that people are urged to voluntarily leave the site. So some of the people staying there might decide to leave to family or to other alternative accommodation, or they can choose to enter the city provided facilities.
And should they dig in and refuse?
Well, then the eviction order will be carried out by the sheriff of the Western Cape High Court.
What steps, and you mentioned the word dignity, what steps are being taken to ensure that this is all done humanely and with respect for people's rights?
Yeah, the individual, according to the court order, the individual staying there has a month to vacate the premises. So there's already a notice going up at the property indicating that the facility needs to be evacuated. And thereby, there's a voluntary offer by the City of Cape Town since the start of the occupation that they are able to enter these facilities of the city. So no one will be forced to enter these facilities, but the facilities are there, which provide a much safer and humane condition, living condition for people than what they find at the Castle of Good at the moment.
How do you respond, or how does the minister respond to claims that this particular process simply prioritizes tourism over addressing a wider problem of homelessness?
I think that's incorrect, because not only is the Castle of Good Hope eviction order that was granted, but the Department of Public Works is busy with a number of eviction orders across the country for properties that have been occupied. In the city of Itakwini, a property has been evacuated that was formerly occupied by the South African Police Service. The individuals occupying that premises have been removed. A separate court order was also granted at the Waterloo property in the city of Cape Town. So it's really not about a tourism site, but it's more about public owned properties that are illegally occupied that needs to be evacuated to ensure that they are used for the greater public good.
I understand that, but you'll concede all of this does leave a bitter taste in the mouth, doesn't it? It's not nice to evict people, is it?
No, unfortunately, I don't think anyone would like to find a situation where we have currently, and that's why the City of Cape Town is probably the best in the country done work to establish these safe spaces, to exactly like you said, provide people with the dignity of the safe spaces, with food, with shelter, with water. No one, I don't think any of us in South Africa wants individuals to be staying on the side of the streets and the cold and wet winters of Cape Town. I don't think that's dignified to anyone living in South Africa at the moment.
Just finally, and on another issue, a while back, the minister was talking to me about the construction mafia across different provinces, and there was a plan to put a stop to this. What progress has been made?
Yeah, so big progress is being made in having a summit, possibly at the end of October in KwaZulu-Natal, where all the public works MECs across the country will gather, as well as ministers in the law enforcement cluster, to ensure that we devise a comprehensive strategy to address the issue of construction mafia in South Africa.
What's the minister's thinking on that strategy? What needs to be done immediately?
I don't think we can preempt the outcome of a meeting of such a nature, but I do think the minister has expressed concerns over the 30% procurement rule that has been used to abuse by criminal elements. And he says a way needs to be found to truly empower black and small businesses without it being used by criminal entities across the country.
James de Villiers, thank you very much indeed. Speaks for the Public Works Minister, Dean McPherson. And just before I bid you farewell, on our online poll today, this was our lead story. We're just over 100 days of the Government of National Unity. So how do you feel about it? Are you happy so far? Is the jury still out? Or do you have doubts that this process is going to hold? If you have a view on that, and I'm sure that you do, I invite you to go either to our LinkedIn page or X, and we'll have a look, and I'll bring you the results on the program tomorrow. That's also our show for today. MoneyWeb at Midday is live at noon weekdays. We're then up as a podcast. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Listen to the daily live stream of MoneyWeb at Midday, or download episodes on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, or follow MoneyWeb News on social media for more updates. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.